Okay, so why did you agree to do this interview today?
Because of my relationship with you, and you asked me, needed it for a class, and, thought that I don't really know what it's about, so interested in doing in finding out what it's about.
Okay, well, can you tell me a little bit about your childhood, and, like, what it was like?
My childhood
Or what
perfect.
Were you like as a child?
What was I like as a child?
Yes, sir.
I was very active. I loved sports, but as a child, I loved, like, Cowboys and Indians, Army, guns, sword fights, getting dirty. I enjoyed that a whole lot more than sports at that time. I didn't really get heavily involved in sports until I was... I mean, I started playing ball, you know, at a young age, but for me, I don't remember being attracted to sports until probably around 10. I remember playing a lot, but not really being attracted to the game of baseball until I was probably around 10 years old, and then it kind of got real for me, figured out that I was okay at it. And so that's kind of where it changed for me.
Did you play any other sports besides baseball?
Yeah, I played football. I played basketball until I realized that it was not my sport at all. So I quit playing basketball after the seventh grade. I played football all the way through. I played baseball since I was five. So, but I mean, I like other kinds of sports too. I'd play volleyball with our church. When I got in college, we would have a beach volleyball court, and I would play beach volleyball. I played soccer growing up. We have people that don't understand how soccer really helped me as an athlete, my feet, and running. We played a lot of soccer. A lot of sports. Skipping some there.
Yeah. Can you tell me one of the most difficult moments in your life?
Oh, it's easy, man. I got a lot of difficult moments in my life. So do you want it to be recent, or do you want it to be closer to my childhood?
You can do both of those if that's what you'd like.
Well, I guess what I would say would be related to, you know, y'all's age is I had a huge issue when I was in high school. My friends started venturing into the path of alcohol and drug. I wouldn't necessarily say drug use, but really heavy alcohol use. And that was not who I was, and I made a stance against that. But so that put me on an island with them, but they would bring me off that island whenever a sporting event would come up. And so when I graduated high school, my relationship with them was only geared to what we did on the field. I don't really have any memories of doing anything else with them. And so that was hard because I was always by myself unless there was a sporting event going on. Closer to now in my life, my mother's not here because she was killed in a car wreck when I was a freshman in college, coming up to see me for a... I was on the president's list for my grades, and they were coming up to a banquet. Had a baseball game that night playing against LSU Shreveport. And I played that night, and I got struck out on a 21-inch strike zone. And at Delta State as a freshman, anytime that you aren't successful at the plate, man, that puts you back probably another 2 weeks from getting a chance. I mean, it was really hard to crack the lineup. And so I was upset about that. My mom called me that night. They were coming up the next day, and I talked to her for a minute, 38 seconds, because I had a real phone instead of one that was a cell phone. And when I hung up, a minute, 38 seconds was on the top, and I hung it up, and that was the last conversation I had with her. She was killed in a car wreck on the way up to Delta State, and regretted every minute of not talking longer. I don't have anything else I would want to say. But just wish I'd have had more time to talk to her. And I wish she would be able to meet my wife and my kids and see what. But I wouldn't be the person I am today if she was still alive. And I know that sounds backwards. But, you know, her death made me grow up.
Well, I guess, so listening to that, I guess, what's your relationship with your father?
Well, right now, I would say my relationship with my father is more distant than it's ever been. When my mom, I always admired how hard he worked. He owned his own business, Worked hard every day, all the time, worked at a sawmill, did every job on the sawmill and ran the sawmill. So he's always a worker. He could always do anything. If it was a task put in front of him, he could figure it out. After my mom died, I feel like that confidence in himself dropped. Maybe she's provided confidence in him in a lot of things. But he got hurt in the accident, and that bothered him. He couldn't do the things he wanted to do. And then he had to go out of state to work because his sawmill business went under. My mother had the stable job at the bank, and now she wasn't there, so everything kind of shifted onto him. So he had to find work. He went and worked, you know, Wyoming, down in Texas, Louisiana. He was working construction. He was making great money. But he wasn't exactly working construction. He was working in a tool room, handing out tools. And I think, honestly, my dad got lazy. And I don't deal well with lazy. I don't deal well with it. And in that regard, I think I'm at odds with him right now because I'm like, why don't you just get up and do something instead of sitting there focusing on your circumstances? So that's kind of where I am with my dad. Still admire him. Still think it's, but I'm not proud of him right now.
During that moment in your life, did you ever have any, I guess, doubts with your beliefs?
No way. Got stronger. I remember heading to the hospital where my dad was the day my mom and dad had the accident. My dad was emergency flown to Little Rock, and I was in a police escort coming back from Delta State. And I remember sitting there not crying, carrying on a conversation like I am with you right now, and people looking at me going, why are you not falling apart? And all I remember saying to people was, if I do not move on, I will look up when I'm 40 and I'll still be sitting here feeling bad for myself for a circumstance that I had no control over. I think my faith took a huge turn into the positive direction when I was about 32 years old. And it's been growing every day. So never wavering in that. I think my dad did. I think he had an anger issue. But I never had an anger issue with it. Never blamed anybody for it. My anger comes most of the time from not being able to talk about it when I was there, because whenever I was being strong and moving forward, I never got a chance to really grieve. And when I didn't get to grieve, my grievings turned to anger in moments. And I'm not mad about that. I just never dealt with that issue. So I have outbursts.
Okay, so like after that moment, like what were two people that had the biggest influence in your life?
Two people had the biggest influence in my life after that. Can it be just two or can it be more?
Oh, it can be as many as you like.
Okay, well, first of all, my roommate, Lee Milton, who was, he came in as an incoming freshman as I did at Delta State. And he had to be my roommate when that happened. So I was in my dorm room, not knowing the situation was going on, because the guy that came and got me out of class said that my dad had an accident and my mother was going to call me. Well, that was misread. My grandmother was going to call me, and I thought my dad had an accident because he worked at a sawmill. And so I'm sitting there in my dorm room waiting with one of my coaches, and my roommate Lee comes in there, and they stop him and call him out, and they kind of tell him what's going on, and he never stayed away from me. He wasn't scared. He'd seen me through the good and the bad, and so therefore he wasn't scared to be around me. And he took care of everything for me when I went home. I was home for 2 weeks before I came back to finish up school, and he took care of everything for me. And then when I got home, a friend named Will McCants, who grew up in Fordyce with me, and he moved when we were going into the sixth grade, and we just stayed friends forever. He literally left school and came and stayed with me for 2 weeks at my grandmother's house while I was going through the funeral process. My dad was kind of in a coma, and he stayed with me the whole time and didn't care how it was going to affect his schoolwork. And I remember his dad came to the funeral, and he looked at me, and his dad was kind of straight to the point kind of guy, and he goes, you go back to school next week. And I said, but he said, no buts. You go back to school next week. He knew if I hung out down at Fordyce that I probably never would go back. One of the best things that ever happened to me. And then whenever I transferred from Delta State after my junior season to come to Henderson State, because my dad wasn't doing real well. I got hurt, wasn't getting to play because of that, so I wanted to come home and at least see if I could finish playing baseball, and I did. That's where I met Jared Eason Moose, who is best man at my wedding. He needed me as much as I needed him for different things in his life, and I learned who I was. I gained confidence in who I was, and through all that, I met the best person in my life is my wife. I wouldn't have met her if I hadn't went back to Henderson, met Moose, and really find out, you know, and gain confidence in who I was.
Looking back now, what would be some advice you'd give either your teenage self or like going through like your college years?
I would give my teenage self advice in dealing with my friends to not act better than thou. I think that one thing that really affected my relationship with them is that I didn't want to have the choices they did, but I didn't handle it the right way. I secluded them and probably made them feel that I thought I was better than them. And there's a better way to do that. In college, from my freshman to my junior year, I would have loved to sit and look at myself and say, man, baseball's not that important. Don't make it so important that you dread I didn't know how to handle failure. And so, therefore, if I couldn't handle failure, I could handle success. And so when they would come in and out of my life, I was wavering so big and bad, and I put so much effort into it. I didn't even enjoy winning. We were 98-23 in my three seasons at Delta State, won a conference championship. We finished third in the World Series, and I actually got to play in the Division II World Series, and I wish I had enjoyed it more. And it's because I was so focused on trying to get on the field and trying to do this and trying to get that I put too much into baseball. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, going all out, giving it all you got, but when you walk off the field, leave it. And if I could give, and to me, the people that play in the big leagues are the ones that do that, the ones that can walk away. And some people are like, are they on drugs? Because they're just so calm. It's because they don't let it be that important. And I think the sooner I learned that when I got to Henderson, the better I played. I was, all-region player, all-conference player two times, and ended up getting, signed for a little bit of money, free agency for about a month and a half, and I would have never gotten there if I'd have taken it as serious as I did when I was at Johnson.
Okay, so growing up through high school and college, what was like some of the things that really hurt you the most that people would say about you?
They'd call you a goody two shoes if you were kind of sticking to the right or wrongness, and they weren't. The form of dress of my community is camouflage, all camouflage. Like that is the form of dress, and I didn't wear that, and so I stood out like a sore thumb. And of course, I got called gay, and I got called all kinds of things like that, and. Because that's just not who I was. I treated going to school every day as a job, so I dressed for it. When I was in college, I would take 8 o'clock classes all the time, and I would dress for it like I was going to work. First of all, I wasn't going to be a teacher. I was going to work in as an engineer, and I would get up every day, treat it like a job, and dress for it. And that just, it takes people a while to get used to that. I'm still here at this school, and people aren't used to it. You get new incoming freshmen, and they always look at, who is that weird guy? And all that. So that really hasn't changed. But I think the most complimentary thing that I get is that people say, well, you're not really who we thought you were. You know? And that's nice.
Okay, so going like through your teenage years in college, like what were some of the jobs that you remember doing to make a little extra money?
I worked for my dad. And I remember it vividly. First of all, I paid for my vehicle because we had a folder company in the community, and they needed pallets to transport, paper and the loads of pallets. They needed pallets for the loads of folders that they were selling, and so I got to use the lumber from my dad's sawmill, and I would make 100 pallets once a month. for $5.75 a pallet. So I'd make $575 and I'd pay for my car and my insurance. And I would basically work one weekend, maybe two weekends if I had to go and cut the lumber up. Like, because he would have the lumber and then I would have to use a bandsaw to cut it into the right widths, the right lengths. And, you know, then I would nail it up and all this kind of stuff. Now, I guess the thing that I don't realize now that I got away with is I never had to pay for materials. And so it was straight up coming to me, my dad, and them kind of took care of that. But when I graduated high school, my dad wanted me to work. I wanted to work and make some money. I was playing American Legion baseball. We didn't have all this travel ball tournament mess. And I always said, I want to work with you. And he said, okay, you're going to work with me. You're going to be on the lumber line. So in that, you're down at the bottom of the chain. And these cross ties and different widths of boards are coming down a chain, and you got to pull them in different bins. All right, a cross tie is 8x8 block of wood, and it's hardwood. It's oak, and it is heavy as it can be. So I would get there at 7:30, and I would be working with the workers. Like, the guy's making no money. The guy's down there has got rough go of it. And I was going to play college baseball, and my dad had me down there in the chain pulling that stuff, and those guys would not let me hurt my hands. As it's coming down, we had this guy named Big Ed, and Edward would not let me pick up those cross ties. Every time I tried to reach to do it, he would almost pick them up by himself as he was prying them. And those things would probably weigh, I don't know, 300 pounds maybe, and he was just getting after it. He didn't want me to mess my hands up because he knew I was getting out of Fort Ice and I was going to do something. It was a big deal to them. And I would work from 7:30 to 3:30. And then I would go because Coach Kennison sent us a workout. We'd have to have a workout that we were doing, lifting, and I'd go do that. And then I would go play American Legion baseball. So I remember that very vividly. And I also remembered, one, no place on earth is hotter than that sawmill. It had dirt I've never seen before in my life. It was charcoal gray that would almost melt your shoes. It was so hot. So I remember that very vividly. And when I was in college, I was worked at a as soon as I graduated, or as soon as I got done with my eligibility, I had one semester left at school. So I stayed and went to summer classes. And I worked for a hardwood mill that my dad was a friend with, and they had kills. And what kills are is you put these big bunks of lumber inside these big rooms, and they had a furnace that got so hot it sucked all the moisture out of the wood. And so I was working for a guy for a favor for my dad, and I basically did every job that they had. I weed-eated, I swept up sawdust. One day we had to fix the furnace. And I was basically just a go-get-these-tools guy. But that furnace was so hot that I had to continually pick my feet up and down, or my shoes would melt to it. And so I don't miss doing any of that kind of stuff, for sure.
Okay, so from leading from the sawmill job, how did you find your current career?
I found my current career by default. I was going to be an engineer. That's what I was going to do my life. But when I went to Delta State, we had to pick a major first semester. First semester, you had to pick one. They're like, we know it's going to change. We had to pick a. So I was going in. Every plan test I ever took in high school, anything I ever did pointed to architecture and engineering. So that's what I was going to do. I walked in to pick it. We don't have engineering. We have pre-engineering. Okay, sign me up for that. Well, pre-engineering, you're going to be here for 2 years, and then you're going to transfer to Mississippi State. I said, well, Mississippi State's not giving me a baseball scholarship. I'm going to be here 4 years. And so I majored in math because I thought math was what engineering is. So I majored in math. I got all the way to my third year. And that's when after my junior season, that's when I transferred to Henderson State. I get to Henderson State, no engineering. And I don't want to go back to school. So I was going to finish it out. And at Henderson State, there's no Bachelor of Science of Education for mathematics. It's just Bachelor of Science of Mathematics. And so that's what I finished with, but you have to take teaching classes with it so you can get your certification. And so I did that, and then I ended up going and doing my student teaching because I was like, I'll just finish this out, and we'll see what's up. I went and did my student teaching at Lakeside High School. I walked in. Darren Landry was my mentor teacher that was there that I was under, and he was the offensive coordinator of the football team. So I walk in, and he looks me dead in the face first day because I was in a little better shape than I am now. And he goes, "You gonna be a coach?" And I have a hard time telling people no when it comes to stuff like that. I don't want them to think I'm lazy. I don't want them to think that. But I was actually ready to do something else with my life and get away from sports. And I was like, "Yeah, I guess." And he said, "Well, if you are, you can go with us tomorrow. We're playing Whitehall in a scrimmage game. You can go with us." I said, "Okay," because I don't want to be like, "No, I'm not going to something because you're my mentor teacher." And so I signed up to go. I rode with him up there to Whitehall, and I'm sitting up in the box. He's up in the booth calling plays, and I'm sitting behind him because he's who I'm with, and they're running a soft cover two, and the safety's not rolling when we roll out. So if we roll out to the left side, the backside post is wide open because the safety's crashing down and not going back deep. And I said, "You run the backside post, you'll probably score." And he said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah." Ran the backside post, and they scored, and I've been in coaching ever since. So
do you feel like your job was like a calling, or do you believe it was?
I believe my job is what I'm supposed to do. Calling, I don't know. I just believe it's what I'm supposed to do. I think if I'd done anything else, I don't think I would fit.
Okay, so what role did, while growing up, what role did religion play in your life?
Growing up or more recently? Growing up, religion was always discussed. My mother, pretty sure she was an angel from heaven, and so therefore it was extremely important to her, and she taught me everything I needed. I accepted Christ at the age of 7, which as of recently I have discovered how hard that is for a person to really accept Christ at that age. You don't really understand and know and all this kind of stuff. So in my more recent life, I have, I guess I would say, developed more confirmation of that through things that I'm doing, through my, you know, my faith and all this kind of stuff. But it was always prevalent. My mom always had me in it. She always made it important. It, for some reason, always guided my decisions. Always. I mean, I don't recall it ever not. Like, 'cause my friends were choosing to do other things, and I wasn't. Why was that? You know? And so it's always kind of guided what I was doing. And so with that, I would say religion's always been there and basically kept me to where I'm at now. So probably the major role.
Okay, so do you feel like it's important to pass your religion or like your beliefs to your children?
Oh, yes. I think the number one goal for me is that both my kids are going to heaven. They're solidified that fact. Now the pathway of discipleship is clearly what we're supposed to do, but sometimes I think they disciple me.
Okay, did you like school growing up?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so did you have any siblings growing, like more obviously, did you have any siblings?
I have a sister that's really my cousin. She's basically been like my sister my entire life. She was born in 1992. My parents only had one child, me. My mom couldn't have any more kids. And when Whitley was born, like I said, I didn't have a lot of friends in school. I spent a lot of time with her, and she's my sister. So I don't have any blood siblings.
All right, so what was one of the worst things you did as a kid?
Worst thing I did?
Yeah.
Like, how do you mean?
I guess, like, probably one of the worst things you got in trouble doing, like,
or maybe not even got caught. I have guilty conscience, okay? And, so whenever I was in the eighth grade, me and some buddies were at a baseball field. They were having a high school baseball game. And we just kind of go walking all over town. We walked over to Buddy's house, just kept walking around, and boy, everybody was ready to start trying chewing tobacco and snuff. So I dipped one time. I went home, never got sick, never had an issue. couldn't go to sleep because I knew I did something behind my parents' back, walked in there and told them myself. So that's probably not the worst thing I ever did, but I know it's the worst thing that ate me up that I had to confess, I guess.
What were the...
My grandfather taught me how to cuss pretty good. I'd get in trouble with that.
So what were your parents' reactions when you confessed that?
My dad laughed at me. And my mom, she just kind of sat there and stared at me and told me she was disappointed in me. And I never had to worry about disappointing her again because I was going to strive not to do that.
Do you have any regrets in your life?
Regrets? Everybody does, don't they? I guess not any regrets I can't live with.
I'm just waiting on your answer.
I would have said before I met my wife that I regretted not telling the girl I dated in high school that I loved her and how important she was to me. But then I realized that after I met her later, that was 4 years before I met Jesse, and so I would have probably said that was a big regret while I was in college until I met her, and then I don't even really think about it anymore. So I guess no regrets in the sense that I can't live without.
Okay, so what are you proudest of personally and professionally in your life?
Proud? I hate that word, man. I hate proud. Personally, I'm glad I figured out who I'm supposed to be as a husband and know where that role fits. And I'm glad that I wake up every day to strive towards that goal. Professionally, I'm sitting here in a room with one of my former players. I have former players come to practice. That's all I need to say about that.
All right, so this should be the last question. What are you most grateful for?
Most grateful for? I view what people call blessings and things differently in my life. I don't think blessings are things that we think they are. I think those are more gifts. I think if God bless me with this job, or God bless me with this kid, or God bless me with this wife, I don't believe that, because then people start measuring themselves against each other. And so I'm grateful for all of it. And so I'm most grateful that I got to have two kids, because if me and my wife would have waited a year later, we would have never had Graham, because we can't have kids anymore. I'm grateful that I had a class right across from Lucas Nicholson's wife Lucas Nicholson's mom whenever I was at Joe T. Robinson, or I never found out about the Bologna job. I'm grateful that Coach Escola at Joe T. Robinson gave me a head coaching job when I was 1 year into coaching. I'm grateful that my wife works by me every day now. You know? I don't know. I'm grateful that a group of kids in 2017 got beyond bad coaching and won everything. I don't know. I guess that would be it. Just, I'm grateful for all of it. But I don't think that I don't look back and go, oh, I'm blessing this and blessing that and blessing this. Man, I'm blessed because I know I love, and that's not easy for people to understand that, to know that love is sacrificial and what I'm willing to give up, and I've figured that out. I have hope and eternal life, and I got faith that it's real. And I think that's what does that believe in Christ. I think those are all the blessings we all possess.
All right, that should be it.
That should be it.